Kilayim Perek Ches Mishnah Aleph 8:1. This Mishnah serves as a great review of what we said so far, as well as an introduction to what we're going to say coming up. So the 8th Perek of Kilayim, we'll be discussing the halachas of Kilay Behema, of forbidden mixtures with animals, of which there are two different issues. One issue is to cross breed animals, that is to force them or physically make them mate. And the second issue is to cross-work them to, let's say, for example, have an ox and a donkey pull a plow together. So that will be the topic of our perek over here. But the Mishnah first, in Mishnah Aleph, will contrast the halachas of the two types of kilayim we've seen so far, namely kilay hakerem and kilay zeraim, with the two types of kilayim that we're going to see, namely kilay behema, and then in the final perek, the ninth perek of kilayim, we'll discuss kilay begadim, the forbidden mixtures and clothing, which is what we call shatnas, wool and linen woven together. So the Mishnah says, defining the differences between the four categories of kilayim, kilay hakerim, kilay zeraim, kilay behema, and kilay begadim, by saying, kilay hakerim, when it comes to forbidden mixtures in a vineyard, asurim milizroa, umilakayim, vaasurim bahana. Kilay hakerim is forbidden to plant and to maintain, and it's forbidden to get benefit from it. So each in its own time. First, milizroa, to plant it. So a fascinating thing, which we've discussed a couple times already, is that it's not clear at all what the nature of the prohibition of kilay, the exact definition of the prohibition of planting kilay hakerem is. The pasuk forbids, I'll speak English to make sure it's perfectly clear, it forbids planting kilayim in a vineyard. So there's two ways to understand that. Many understand it simply mean that you can't have a grain or green planted in a vineyard. So to plant wheat inside a vineyard, then those four almost the work area of a vineyard, a kerem, etc., that would be considered to be planting kilayim. That's how our Mishnahis have read the whole way through, and that seems to be sort of how it's been understood. However, many learn, it's based on a Yerushalmi, and the many learn, including the Rambam, including the Bartanura, our hero, that the pasuk should be read, don't plant kilayim, meaning kilay zeraim, meaning two different species of, let's say, grain. So, for example, wheat and barley together in a vineyard. And if you do plant wheat and barley together in a vineyard, so then it's not just generic kilayim, but it's kilayim in a vineyard. And the produce of that forbidden mixture, meaning the grain, both the wheat and the barley, as well as the grapes, will become asr bahana, forbidden to get benefit from. So that's how the Bartanura learns that kilayim in a vineyard, kilay hakerem, isn't how we've sort of seen on face value throughout the past four parakim, merely having grains or greens in a vineyard. It's having two different species, let's say, of grain in a vineyard. And if you do plant wheat and barley, two different species of grain together, that's already kilay zeraim, in a vineyard, you also have kilay hakerem, and therefore you'll be actually getting two sets of malchus, of lashes, one for violating kilay zeraim, planting wheat and barley together, and a second set of malchus for planting that forbidden mixture of wheat and barley together in a vineyard. That's indeed how the Bartanura learns, that's indeed how the Rambam paskens it. Surprisingly, but that's how it is. It's surprising because our Mishnayos didn't seem to suggest that, but that is how they rule. Second of all, kilay hakerem is also asur milakayim, to maintain it. So that means if one has a vineyard and in the vineyard he sees his wheat growing or the greens, whatever it is, the vegetables growing in the vineyard, you've seen already it has to be removed. If a person fails to remove that grain or greens from growing inside his vineyard, again, like the usual things we said before, within four amos of the vineyard or six tfachim if it's a single vine, then he is violating this. However, it seems that one, to machlok is actually if to be mekayim kilayim in a vineyard is an issur d'oraisa d'rabbanan. Even if it's an issur d'oraisa to just be mekayim it, one certainly would not get the punishment of lashes for violating the d'oraisa unless he did some actual masa, some actual act, because just passively violating a d'oraisa doesn't incur lashes ever. So that means to just simply ignore the wheat and let it grow inside the vineyard would be a violation of being mekayem kilayim in a kerem, very possibly a doraisa violation, however not one punishable by lashes until he does an act. An act would be like, for example, like he builds a fence around it. So he protects the key lime to grow further. That would for sure incur lashes. If it's a Doraisa, then rabbinic, then Doraisa lashes. And if it's just a Durabanan, then Malchus Mardus, just rabbinic lashes. And the Asurim Bahana, the growth of key lime in a vineyard is forbidden to get benefit from. We've seen that before, Pentikdosh. So it's forbidden to get benefit from both the grain growing, if it's grain, and the vines, as we defined in previous Mishnayos, around that grain. The Pasha says it's just Asur Bahana, meaning you can't eat it and can't do other benefit from it. It's meaning you can't use it for firewood, you can't give it as a gift, etc. It's not necessarily the case that you have to destroy it, per se. You have to burn it, but maybe you only have to burn it in the event that you decide to destroy it. So if you're going to destroy it, you have to burn it. But according to many, if you opt just to let it, you pull it out as forbidden key lime and let it go to rot in the ground, whatever it is, or just, you know, leave it be and not eat it, that or whatever, that would be permissible. Okay, so that's kilai hakerem. As for kilai zeroim, says the Mishnah, those are asur milizroa. It's forbidden to plant kilai zeroim, meaning to plant wheat and barley together, for example. Umalakayim, and it's forbidden to let it keep on growing together, as the Mishnayos in the first three Prakim defined. You can't let it grow as mixed species. Let's separate them. But umutaram ba'achila v'kol shekein bahana. Even though it's forbidden to plant or even let grow kilai zeraim, mixed species together, if they did grow together and you let them grow on purpose even, still you may eat them. You can eat their produce and ensure that you can get any benefit, meaning not only eat, but a kol shekein all the more. So you could just, you know, give it as a gift, use it as firewood and so on. That's okay. So just for example, many fruits are hybrid fruits of two different, you know, fruits put together, you know, the old tangelo and all the weird fruits. So it's forbidden to do that. We said the one prohibition midoraisa when it comes to trees is grafting trees together. So you can't graft trees together. If you did graft them, you'd be violating kilai zeraim. But the fruit that grows from the tree, or all the fruits you can buy in the grocery that are different hybrid fruits, are yes, permissible to be eaten. The Mishnah now discusses a third category of kilayim. It's going to skip to what will be the ninth parak's topic, meaning we'll now discuss kilai begadim, forbidden mixtures of fabrics in clothing and textiles. And that's going to be specifically the prohibition of wool and linen together. We know it is shatnas. And the Mishnah says kilai begadim, when it comes to forbidden mixtures of textiles, mutarim b'chol davar, they're permitted for all uses. The only restriction on kilai begadim, on shatnas, is actually wearing it, and we'll see more about wearing it and that, covering yourself with it, in the ninth parak. But the point is, if you're, for example, a salesperson and you're selling shatnas garments to non-Jews, that's no problem, etc. Any benefit you get from shatnas is okay, with the exception being you cannot actually wear it. And finally, kilai behema, when it comes to the forbidden mixtures of animals, mutarim legadel ulekayem, they're actually permitted to raise and maintain together. So here the words kilai behema mean two different species of animals. So we're saying, for example, if you have horses and donkeys, which are two different species, you may keep them in the same corral, you can feed them together, etc. That's not a problem. Even if you know full well they're likely or liable to mate, and them mating is two different species mating together, that's not a problem. You're allowed to do that. Kilai behema, horses and donkeys, for example, mutarim legadel, you can raise them together. Ulekayem, you can feed them together, no problem. Vein nasurim ela milaharbia. The prohibition of kilai behema, at least the one of the two Doraisa prohibitions, the one about cross-mating animals of different species, is when you physically get in the act and kind of conjoin them together, like, you know, like Lego pieces, you put them together, as is what farmers, people involved in animal husbandry do. That is the way of farming even today. But if they do it on their own, that's not a problem. So Einun Asurim, if they do it on their own, it's not a prohibition, it's not a problem. Ela Milaharbia, the prohibition is actually putting them together. And Kilai Behema, now the Mishnah skips the topic of cross-working animals, as I call it, meaning the shore, the donkey, and the ox pulling together or something like that. Mishnah doesn't discuss it. We'll discuss in the parak presently. In any case, that's to do it together is forbidden. The Mishnah doesn't speak that out, but the Mishnah does say, Kilai Behema, Asurim Zebezeh. if you have now, and this phrase, kilai behema, has taken a new meaning now. Here we're talking about the offspring of forbidden mixtures. So, for example, you have horses and donkeys living in the same corral. They produce mules. So the mules, if you have two mules, you may not mate those mules together. Now, according to the Bartanura, our Mishnah is talking about a case where one of the mules has a donkey for a mother, and one of the mules has a donkey for a father, and the other parent is the horse. So that is the case where you may not crossbreed these animals together intentionally. Notwithstanding the fact, by the way, that in the case of mules, the mules can't have any offspring. That's not the point. And that would still be usser, to actually be laharbiya, to put two mules together, one male, one female. If the mother of one mule is a horse and the mother of the other mule is a donkey, would be forbidden. Even though they're both called mules, they're different kinds of mules. I mean, you look at the mother as being the relevant feature. At least that's other part. I was explaining over here, this Tana. And that being the case, to mate the two mules of different types together would be forbidden. Kilaim Perkhes Mishnah Base 8:2. We now begin the discussion of Kilai Behem in earnest, the prohibition of mixing different species of animals. And we said already that there are two separate Isurim from the Torah. One is to crossbreed two animals of different species to make them mate. And the other one is crosswork the animals, so to speak, meaning to have them work together to pull something if they're different species. So in the previous mission, we discussed the crossbreeding element, and now we will begin the topic of the crossworking, so to speak. What's interesting is that the rest of this parak will discuss this topic of kilai behema. The next parak, the last parak of the Masechta, will discuss the topic of kilai begadim, prohibited mixtures and textiles, and they we call shanas. And the pesukim that govern these two isurim are back-to-back and very similar. What's fascinating is that when it comes to the kilai behema, the cross-working of animals, and the prohibition is extremely general, any two animals of any species, whereas when it comes to the forbidden mixtures in textiles, shatness, so that's very specific, exclusively to wool and linen. So the sukkim inside, one pasuk says, Losachrosh b'shor uvachamor yachdav. One may not plow with an ox and a donkey together. That's the prohibition. And although it's talking about cows, donkeys, and plowing, none of that's specific, meaning it would be true if it would be any two animals of different species, and even if they're not plowing. That's interesting, and as much as in contrast to that, the next pasuk says, Lo silba shatnez, semru fishtum yachdav. One shouldn't wear shatnez, which is wool, semer is wool, and pishtum is linen, yachdav, together. And there it's specific and exclusive to wool and linen. The reason why, when it comes to our topic here in this parak of kilai behema, there's a separate a drasha that is understood that the shor in our pasuk here in Devarim regarding kilai behema is we learn out like the shor in the pesukim referring to Shabbos that applies to any animal, meaning animals and birds and fish. Therefore, the Mishnah says inside behema in behema, if you cross work two behemos, domesticated animals, chaya v'chayim chaya, or if you have two undomesticated animals working together, or behema mechaya, or v'chaya in behema, or a domesticated and undomesticated working together, it doesn't matter. Same goes if it's tameim tamea, if it's two not kosher species of animals hitched together, or tahorim tahora, or two kosher species of animals, meaning as opposed to the shor, which is kosher as a cow, and the chamor, the donkey, which is unkosher, the shor being tahor and the chamor being tamea. But it doesn't make a difference. Tamea im tahora, tahora im tamea. Any of those combinations, all the combinations, it makes no difference. Asurin lacharosh, they're forbidden to plow together, meaning one can't attach any two different species together to pull a plow. That would be sort of on their own. They're pulling the plow by themselves. Or belimshoch, or to even pull them. So in other words, these two animals presumably are hooked up to something that's doing some kind of work, pulling a wagon or something, and you're having a string and pulling them. Or v'lanhig, or if you're just leading them, meaning you're not actually pulling them, you're just guiding them, encouraging them to go, whatever the case is. In all those cases, it's an Isra Torah to hook up two different species of animals to pull anything. So just for example, this is really halach l'maisa. Of course, you can't pull a donkey and a plow together on a plow, donkey and a cow together pulling a plow. But let's say, for example, you have the Iditarod sleigh, dog sleigh race. So indeed, people hook up dogs and wolves together to pull their sleds. And that would be forbidden in Isra Doraisa to participate, to do sit on such a sled and get your dog and wolf to mush and pull the sled together would be an Isra Doraisa of Kilai Behema. Kilaim Perek Ches, Mishnah Gimel, 8:3. We continue the discussion of Kilai Behema, cross working animals. Here the Mishnah says, Hamanhig, one who guides animals. For example, you have a wagon, and he's the wagon driver, and he encourages the wagon, which is being pulled by a horse and a donkey together. He says, you know, go, and the animals go. So, Sofeg Es Ha'arbaim, he literally absorbs the 40, meaning he gets lashes midoraisa, which would mean, in fact, 39 lashes. But the point is, he's over the lav by merely saying go without doing anything more than that. That really is almost a repetition of the previous words of the previous Mishnah to be manig one's chayav for. But that certainly is in contrast to the next, potentially contrast to the next line of the Mishnah, which says, Hayoshev Bekaron, if one merely sits in a wagon. He also, Sofeges Harbaim, he also gets 40 lashes, meaning 39 lashes, because he is also over the law. The case is merely sitting down in the wagon makes the mixed team of animals aware that he's there and it's time for them to go, and they'll go. So his very sitting down is a nonverbal, albeit passive prompt for the animals to go, and his presence makes them go, and therefore he's the cause of their going, and therefore he's liable. That sitting down alone will be enough of a mass of an act to make him liable to get Malchus for Kilai Behema. On that point, Rabbi Meir is poter. Rabbi Meir disagrees. Rabbi Meir holds that if a person just sits down and does nothing else, he didn't do any action which would prompt animals to go. And even if the animals move just by the fact that he is present and they're aware of his presence, that's insufficient. That's not considered an act which would make him, the guy who sat in the wagon, liable. So Rabbi Meir exempts him from lashes. However, the lacha is like the Tanakama, meaning just sitting down and the animals going then is, since they went by virtue of his sitting down, makes him liable to lashes. And finally, like a new paragraph here, the Mishnah says, V'hashlishas, if you have a third animal, shikshur l'ritzuos, that's attached to the straps, that's also a surah, that's also forbidden. And what's the case here? That is, for example, you have the wagon and it's being pulled by two horses. So that's the case. You have no kilayim, that's normal. Wagons are pulled by two horses, that's how you do it, and it's legitimate. But if you take a third animal, let's say a donkey, and the donkey is, of course, not a horse, and you attach the donkey to the straps that are attaching the horses to the wagon, meaning the donkey wasn't needed to pull the wagon, and in fact, he isn't doing much pulling, but he's hitched up to this wagon, and they're moving together. Since it's hitched up, that is considered to be cross-working the animals, and therefore that is also forbidden under the Isser of Kilai Behema, because you have a mixed team of horses, and in my case, a donkey, together. Kilaim Perek Ches, Mishnah Dalet, 8:4. More discussion of cross-working animals. Here it says, Ein Koshrin Esasus Lolitzdade Hakaron. If you have a wagon that's being pulled by two oxen, that's okay, because they're two of the same species, ox. But if you can't attach a horse to the side of the wagon, or whatever it's pulling, because from time to time, the horse will pull or push and therefore work simultaneously with the oxen, and that would be cross-working them. Blula achar hakaron, same goes if it's from behind, meaning that the horse is attached to the back of this wagon. So the point is that the oxen are pulling it, the horse is just walking behind, and we're training the ox to learn to walk with the wagon. The concern is that from time to time, even for a moment, the horse could push the back of the wagon simultaneously with the oxen pulling the wagon, and they'd have cross working. Same goes, v'lo es luvdakim l'gamalim. If you have camels pulling something, you can't attach a luvdakim to it. Luvdakim are some kind of wild donkey that comes from Lud, whatever it was, large, strong donkey. Notwithstanding, you can't hook them up, donkeys and camels together, even the donkey at the side or back. Now, new question. Rabbi Huda is discussing the question now of cross-working mules. So a mule, you'll recall, is a hybrid of a horse and a donkey. But a mule can come in two varieties. It can come where the mother's the horse and the father's a donkey, or it could be the mother's a donkey and the father's the horse. So Rabbi Yehuda is going to say that kol hanoldin min hasus, any two mules whose mother is a horse, afal pisha avin chamor, even though they have some chamor inside of them, it doesn't matter, mutar zem zeh, you can have these two mules pull together. In other words, you might have thought perhaps that since part of the animal has donkey part, donkey genes, donkeyness inside of it, that these mules are pulling, you know, working together with cross, you know, partial cross breeding or something, or cross species. No, the answer is no. As long as the mothers are the same, so then it's okay. V'chein ha'nodun min ha'chamor, same goes if the mothers are both donkeys as opposed to horses, it doesn't matter, since afal pi, even though shavi and sus, the fathers of them, are horses, mutar and zemze, it doesn't matter, there's no fear that there's like part of a donkey working with part of a horse, so to speak. Not a problem. However, avol hanoldim min hasus im hanoldim mechamor, if you have mules of both types, in other words, one has a donkey for a mother and one has a horse for a mother, asurin zemze, they cannot pull together. Meaning, according to Rabbi Yehuda, he focuses only on the mother. So he says that it goes after the mother, exclusively. Tver Yisrael speaks out, and the Rambam similarly, that while it's true we're focused on the mother for mules, it's not true that a purebred horse can be hitched up with a mule whose mother is a horse. No, you can't do that. Those are two different species. But if it's two mules, provided they both come from the same, either both from mothers for both were mules, horses, or the mothers of both of these mules were donkeys, then yes, you can hook them up. Kilaim, Perkches, Mishnah Hay, 8:5. The Mishnah discusses a variety of different exotic animals and their status in halacha. The first is haprutios. Haprutios are some kind of mule, but as we said in the previous Mishnah, there are two types of mules, mules that the mother is a horse and mules whose mother is a donkey. Now, prutios, and we said there's a difference, and they're kilan, you have to be afraid that you can't cross-work them, or cross-breed them either, for fear that the two different types are considered two different species. So prutios, the problem is you can't tell whether they come from a mother who's a horse or a mother who's a donkey. And therefore, asuros, they're forbidden to cross-work, meaning if you have any two prutios, you can't hitch them up together to work, because there's a fear that one came from a mother donkey and one came from a mother horse, and they're kilaim zebazeh. Okay, the ramach, now we have the ramach. The ramach, also not clear exactly what kind of sort of wild horse it is, but the point is, mutar, it's considered a wild horse, and one can indeed hook it up with regular horses, and that's not considered kilaim. Next we have the famous and mysterious Adnei Hasadeh. Now, Adnei Hasadeh literally means masters of the field, most likely. And according to the vast majority of Mefarshim, based on the Yerushalmi's treatment, it's some kind of humanoid, human-like creature that is mysteriously attached to the ground via its belly button and has unusual properties. Now, to the best of my zoological understanding or anyone else's that I'm aware of, there are no members of the animal kingdom that nourish themselves from the ground. That's not how animals do things. And there's no creature that even kind of remotely resembles this. So its identity is a mystery. Certainly if one understands it, as Yerushalmi seems to explain it, as some creature that's attached to the ground by its belly button. Now, many more modern commentaries in the past couple hundred years have struggled to figure out exactly what's going on over here. Rav Shimon Schwab, for example, understood that the attachment to the ground is metaphorical. And he says in Mayan Beis Hashoeva, on the Pasuk in Bereishis, Perek Beis Pasuk Chav Gimel, Genesis 2:23, that it's metaphorical, and what's going on over here is this is some kind of like primitive man, like maybe they never got a neshama, like before that, the predates of the Mauritian or whenever it was in that line. And that being the case, he sort of has no ruchni component, and so he's totally hooked up metaphorically to Gashmis and Olam Hazeh. That's as opposed to having a hookup to the ruchni world, the spiritual world, and Olam Haba, etc. So that's sort of Schwab's understanding, which is fascinating. The Tefer Yisrael here on the Mishnah has a long piece, and he ends up saying that it is an orangutan. Now, an orangutan is one of the three great apes. Three great apes are like monkeys, but bigger, I'll call them, and their body plan is very similar to a human, quite similar. So you have orangutans, you have chimpanzees, and you have gorillas, orangutans being the smallest, chimpanzees being medium-sized and the most resemblant to human beings, and gorillas, which are in fact larger. Now, when he says orangutan, it's very likely that in Germany where he was, that wasn't specific to the orangutan as opposed to the chimp or the gorilla. And in fact, the Malbim understands that it's referring to both orangutans or chimpanzees, as the case may be. And the Rambam in the Perish Mishnah similarly just describes like a large ape. So it could well be that we're talking any of the great apes, which are human-like. Whatever the case may be, the Mishnah says that this Adnei HaSadeh is a Chaya, has the status of being a Chaya, as opposed to a behema, which has a very limited application anyways, beyond if someone had a zoo and he sold all the chayos as opposed to the behemos, so the Adnei HaSadeh would be included in the sale, if he included just the chayos, etc. Okay, what's really fascinating is that Rabbi Yossi Omer, Metamos ba'ol ka'adam. These creatures, the Adnei HaSadeh, whatever they are, they're animals. They're not humans. Even according to Rav Schwab, this is not a human as much as doesn't have a neshama. And certainly if it's a chimpanzee or an orangutan or whatever, it doesn't have a neshama, it's an animal. And yet Rav Yossi held that they convey tuma as a corpse, as only human bodies do, via the mechanism called ohel, which means being under the same roof as, or being over or under the recipients of the tumah. So that's remarkable. So Rabbi Yossi holds that these things are so close to being human that they actually convey tumah like a human corpse when they're dead. Fascinating, absolutely fascinating. Moving on, the Mishnah says, Hakupad. A kupad is a porcupine. We have porcupines in Eretz Yisrael to this very day, and they're big and surprising. And along with the chudas hasniyim, which means, the arch will translate this as stone marten. A marten, which is not so different from a weasel, etc., which is like a small, kind of like rodent-y creature. It's carnivorous. And a sneh is like a bush, as in the burning bush. So this is like a bush weasel, literally translated perhaps, or perhaps a stone marten, as the arch will translate it. So both of these creatures have a din of being a chaya, as opposed to being sherets. Now that's significant, besides for if you're selling your zoo and what you include in the contract, but also, for the halachas of tumah and tahara. So when it comes to tumah, there are eight special creatures that are called sheratzim, the famous shmona sheratzim, the eight sheratzim. A sheretz is like a small crawly creature, and the sheratzim comprise a variety of different creatures. Some of them are like rats and other kinds of rodents. Some of them are reptiles, perhaps, even maybe amphibians, if you have the toads and frogs, and perhaps even mollusks. Rashi learns that the chomet, anyways, is a snail. So small creatures that crawl close to the ground are sheratzim. And there's specifically eight of them, and only eight, that have the special status of sheretz, as opposed to a generic chaya, wild animal, a small wild creature. So the difference is, and this is really, for some reason, confounds people, the shmona sheratzim, those eight sheretz creatures, are the least tame, in a way, of all creatures, not the most, the least tame, in a way, as I'll explain more in a second, and also, more importantly, they do not convey tuma, like all other animals. No animals convey tumah if they're alive. Tumah only is conveyed from dead animals. It can be conveyed from living people, but living animals do not ever convey tumah. So when we talk about the Shmona Shratzim, the eight can have eight specific creatures that are called the sherets that convey tuma in an unusual way with unusual tuma status. We're talking about the dead carcasses of these creatures. So the shmona sheratzim convey tuma. There's eight categories of sherets convey tuma exclusively through maga, direct contact, as opposed to other terrestrial creatures. If you have a dead horse or something, so it conveys tuma not just through direct contact, but also by bearing its weight. That is to say, if you go into the grocery store in New York and you pick up a pork chops covered in, you know, saran wrap, so you didn't touch any of the actual flesh of the dead pig, your tummy anyways, because you lift it up, called masa, you bore the weight of the pig flesh, and that's enough to make your tummy, even without direct contact. Not true by the Shmona Shratzim. If you have a dead rat and it's wrapped in cellophane and you pick up the saran wrap covered dead rat, you remain tahor because you didn't have direct contact. So on the one hand, these Shmona Shratzim are less tuma potent in as much as they don't convey tuma unless you have direct contact with them, whereas other dead animals having contact or bearing their weight with their flesh can convey tuma. So they're more potent in that way. On the other hand, when it comes to these eight sheratzim, so the flesh that conveys tuma, and I should point out, when it comes to animals, it's only the flesh, the meat, which conveys tuma, not the bone, etc., horns, etc., etc. So if you see a whatever a dead animal skeleton out there in the desert, and you pick it up, you remain tahor. You have to move meat or touch meat. In any case, the amount of meat, of dead flesh from a sheretz that is required to convey tuma is only ka'adasha, the amount of a lentil, which is very small. A lentil, like whatever. If you don't know what lentils are, think of mini M&Ms. If you've seen those, like the ice cream parlor, they're tiny. So lentil, small like that. So even that much flesh from a sheretz, like a dead rat, would convey tuma when you touch it directly. Whereas when it comes to other creatures, to convey tuma, a lentil's amount is not enough. One needs a kazayas, an olive's volume of flesh to convey tuma. So there you have it. There's a stricture and a leniency when it comes to the eight sheratzim. On the one hand, they don't convey tuma by bearing their weight, masa. On the other hand, they do convey tuma with just a lentil's amount of flesh, as opposed to the usual requirements of a kazayas, an olive's amount of flesh. So here the Mishnah is saying that the kupa, the porcupine, and the chuda sneim, they are both chayos, they're wild creatures, but they're not sheratzim. They're not one of the eight sheratzim, and which is interesting as much as that the choled is one of the shmona sheratzim. So they're similar to sheratzim, but they're actually not sheratzim in that sense, just chayos. Now, on that point, there's some disagreement, as much as the Mishnah says, chudas hasneim, when it comes to the, again, literally I'll translate it as the bush weasels, but let's call them stone martens, whatever they are, some kind of small, like I said, some kind of small carnivore, whatever they are, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Beshame Omrim, Beshame wasn't sure. Beshame wasn't sure if the chudas hasneim is in fact a sheretz or a generic Chaya, Jerek, one creature, and therefore he requires, according to Rabbi Yossi, Beishame requires that one is strict both ways, meaning if the way in which one came into contact with the dead Chudas Hasneim was through direct contact, Maga, so then even if it was just a lentils amount, Ka'adasha, that would have to, he'd have to assume he's Tame, because maybe this chudas hasneim is in fact a sheretz. Whereas if he bore its weight through masa, he lifted it up, even without direct contact, he also has to be afraid that he became tamei, provided, of course, that he bore the weight or lifted up a full kazayas, olive's amount of flesh of a chudas hasneim. That's the word saying now, just inside. I'll read them two more time. Chudas hasneim, when it comes to the chudas hasneim creature, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Beishame Omerim, Rabbi Yossi said that Reishame said, mitama both ways, either kazayas b'masa, by lifting up, even without direct contact, an olive's amount of flesh of the chudas hasneim, v'cha'adasha, and it conveys tuma even with a tiny amount of a lentil volume, b'maga, if you come to direct contact. But anyways, the halacha wouldn't be like Beis Shammai anyways, it would be like Beis Hillel, so we would pass on that the chudas hasneim, whatever it is, is a chaya and not a sheretz. Kilaim, Perek Ches, Mishnah Vav, 8:6. We continue to discuss the taxonomy, the classifications of various animals. As we saw in the previous Mishnah, terrestrial mammals, that is say, land animals that are warm-blooded, they are divided by the Chazal into three categories, the Torah. The Torah divides them into chayos, wild animals, behemos, domesticated animals, and sheratzim, small creepy crawly animals, for lack of a better term. Our mission here will classify a certain animal, starting with the shor bar. Now, the shor bar literally means the wild ox. And we have a machlokas here. The Tanna Kamma says that a shor bar is a min behema, that it's a domesticated animal. Whereas Rabbi Yossi omer min chaya. Rabbi Yossi holds it's a undomesticated animal, tachaya. Different category. The base of the machlokas is that when the psukim talk about the 10 kosher species of animals, three of them we know, cows, goats, and sheep are kosher domestic animals. And there are seven more which are not behemos, they're chayos. Also kosher, but not the domestic variety. One of those is the to'o. What the to'o is, to'o, tough, aleph, vav, what its status, what its identity is not clear. And here, that's the machlokas here. So the Tanna Kamma holds that a shor bar, the wild ox, is a min behema. It's a domestic animal, meaning it's essentially a feral cow. Let's say a cow that was started out somehow in domesticated nature, like a regular cow, but then it found its way back into the wild. Whereas Rabbi Yossi holds it's a minchaya, it's an undomesticated animal, meaning it's a different species. It's a to'o, it's a whole different kind of creature. It may look a lot like a cow, but this wild variety of cow is not a cow at all. So I don't know what it is, but for argument's sake, maybe it's a buffalo or an aurochs or a wildebeest. I don't know, something which is cow-like, but not a cow. Now, this discussion is more than just academic, and more than simply if you have a zoo and you agree to sell all the chayot, will your shor bar be included in the sale? Because there are different halachas that apply to kosher domestic behemos versus kosher undomestic chayos animals. There are two specific differences in, according to Torah law. One of them is that the hard fats around the internal organs called chelev. So chelev is forbidden to be eaten in behemos. That is to say, if you have a cow, goat, or sheep, when you prepare the cow for eating, those hard fats around the organs must be removed. They're forbidden to be eaten as chelev, and they actually carry a very severe penalty of karas, if you consume them. Now, untrue, that doesn't apply when it comes to chayos, wild kosher animals. So if you shecht a deer or a giraffe, those animals are chayos. They can be kosher because they have split hooves and chew the cud, but they're chayos, and therefore their chelev, their organ fats, are permitted to be eaten. They're allowed to be eaten. The second nafkamina is on the halacha of kisui hadam, the covering of the blood. The halacha is that when one shechts, ritually slaughters a behema, a kosher land animal, so there's no mitzvah of kisui hadam. There's no requirement to cover the blood after one slaughters it. You may have seen it done. If you've seen kisui hadam done, it's because what was being shechted was a fowl. Birds, just to anticipate some confusion, if you have a chicken and you shecht the chicken, the blood of the chicken must be covered with some dirt. So that's called kisui hadam, and it applies to kosher fowl, but it doesn't apply to kosher behemoths. Kosher terrestrial land animals, mammals, cows, goats, sheep. On the other hand, there is a mitzvah of kisui hadam if the blood comes from a chaya. So again, if one would slaughter a kosher deer or giraffe, whatever it might be, so there's a mitzvah of kisui hadam. One must cover that blood because the animal is a chaya and there's such a mitzvah. So that would be two nafkaminas, important nafkaminas midoraisa, about whether the shor bar, the wild ox, whatever that animal is a behema or a chaya, but we paskin in that case, whatever the shor bar is, that it's a min behema, it's just a cow, a feral cow. And therefore, the chelev is aser, forbidden to eat those organ fats, and there's no requirement to cover the blood when one slaughters it. The next animal is the kelev, good old dog. So the kelev is a min chaya. The kelev is considered to be an undomesticated animal, a wild animal. Here, the primary nafkamina, the practical difference simply would be if you had a zoo or the similar and you sold all the chayos, the dog goes with it. Rav Meir disagrees. Rav Meir omer, it's a min behema, that a dog is considered to be a domestic animal. But again, the halacha is like the Tanna Kamma, that dogs are considered to be chayos, undomesticated. The chazir, which is the common pig, is a min behema, domestic animal. Only nafkamina there would be, again, if you're selling your zoo, etc., your farm, because, of course, cows aren't kosher, etc. The arod is some kind of wild donkey. But the halacha here says it's a min chaya, it's a undomesticated creature. Now, donkeys are domesticated, of course, which means the arod is really not a donkey. That is to say, the big nafkamina would be if you have a donkey and an arod, they may look alike, but one may not, let's say, for example, team them up to pull a carriage. That would be kilai behema, because a road is a chaya and the normal donkey, the chamor, is a behema. Hapil vahakof, monkeys, excuse me, hapil is elephants, and a kof is a monkey. Those are minchaya. Those are both considered to be wild animals. Again, the nafkamina only really if you're selling your zoo and you stipulate to sell the chayos as opposed to the behemos. Fine, and that's that. So that ends the topic on animal classification. The Mishnah has one more thing to say, and that has to do with the question of what about cross-working an animal and a human being? We said you can't have a cow and a donkey pull a cart or be hooked up together and hitched up together in the pulling process or attached side by side. What about if it's an animal like a horse and a person pulling together? Is that okay? The Mishnah says there's no such problem. The Adam, when it comes to people, mutar im kulam, a person can be teamed up, hooked up, let's say, with any animal doesn't matter which, limshoch, to pull, lachrosh, to plow, balahanig, or to be led, while they're attached to pulling something, before, after, side by side, doesn't make a difference. There's no kilai behema when human beings, with respect to human beings.